Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
When New York Times reporter Benjamin Weiser started investigating allegations of abuse in a Bronx group home for the developmentally impaired, he noticed that one name kept coming up over and over again: Willowbrook, the notorious Staten Island institution that was shuttered in 1987 following documentation of severe abuse and neglect of the patients. The Willowbrook class, as these victims became known, have since been placed in various facilities and institutions across the city. But Ben's reporting has uncovered that many former Willowbrook patients have continued to suffer abuse at the hands of their new caretakers. In fact, Ben reports that in 2019 alone, there were 97 reported allegations of physical abuse by group home workers against Willowbrook alumni. Ben published his findings in a piece for The Times titled "Beatings, Burns, and Betrayal: The Willowbrook Scandal's Legacy." The story was also featured in last week's episode of The Weekly, which you can catch on Hulu and FX. And Benjamin Weiser joins me now from Washington, D.C. Ben, nice to speak with you.
Thank you for having me, Allison.
So, Ben, you covered Manhattan federal courts and you've made a career covering criminal justice. How did you find yourself reporting about abuses at state institutions?
I have covered the federal court in Manhattan for a long time, and several years ago, a lawsuit was filed there on behalf of three residents of a group home up in the Bronx on Union Avenue. And these were all adults, three women. They were all, as everyone in that home, had developmental disabilities. None were verbal. Most were in their 40s and 50s. And had been abused there, at least according to the lawsuit. And the suit eventually led to a big settlement with New York State of about $6 million was paid to families of these three people. But as I did reporting on that lawsuit, as you had mentioned, I started seeing in documents references to Willowbrook. And the Willowbrook State School, as it was known, you know, it's hard to overstate how notorious a place that was in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and even the 1980s. You know, thousands of people, then described as profoundly retarded, were just warehoused there by New York State, from babies all the way up to the elderly. You've seen some of the photos of Willowbrook, and
a lot of people associate Willowbrook with Geraldo Rivera. He went in with a team to investigate what was happening there. Can you describe what they found?
Yes, exactly. There had been other newspapers and magazines that had tried to do reporting on Willowbrook, the Staten Island Advance, for example. But it was really not until 1972 when Geraldo Rivera, then a young reporter for a local New York TV station, entered with cameras at the invitation of a doctor who had just been fired and sort of just started filming. And his graphic footage, which aired locally and then just sort of exploded into the national psyche, showed, and he particularly went into a children's ward, showed scores of children being, you know, left unattended, as we've written, many naked or in rags. Some were strapped in beds or chairs, many in isolation, almost solitary confinement. Many, you could see, were just rocking endlessly on these filthy wards, you know, with feces spread over the walls. And it really exploded. And a few months after that, civil liberties groups, the New York Civil Liberties Union and the Legal Aid Society, filed major lawsuits, class action lawsuits, essentially asking that Willowbrook be closed, that the conditions, you know, be changed while the institution was closing, and that the residents, then more than 5,000, be moved into community-based settings like group homes around New York State and be given much higher quality services. But those photos and people who've seen them, and we quoted one, you know, it almost echoed a concentration camp. People were not being exterminated, obviously, but many people were dying, and the abuse of conditions were just untenable. And although I think many states had their own version of a Willowbrook, Willowbrook itself, Willowbrook in New York, became known globally as a kind of symbol of how the United States warehoused some of its most vulnerable people.
Were there any penalties for the staff working at Willowbrook?
The staff at Willowbrook were, the place was understaffed to start with. Mm-hmm. You would have 50, 60 children on one ward and one attendant. There were investigations back then, local investigations by the authorities, but I'm unaware of any staff who were actually punished. It was more a question of how the state was actually running the institution, and even that it had the institution. And it wasn't really until several doctors there and other staffers tried to organize parents and siblings of the Willowbrook residents to try to demand better conditions, and ultimately led to the lawsuit, that change ultimately began to happen, although it was very slow.
What do we know about where most of those in the Willowbrook class ended up after the institution was shut down?
Right. And we use the term Willowbrook class because there was a class action. Mm-hmm. And in 1975, there was essentially a settlement, a consent decree, in which New York State agreed to move the 5,000, 6,000 Willowbrook residents into residential settings around New York State. A judge had also found that all the Willowbrook class members, the residents, had the constitutional right to the protection from harm. Mm-hmm. And those two events sort of pushed things forward. When you look at the photos of Willowbrook back half a century ago today, and certainly in my case, I never thought those people were still alive today. I mean, I just sort of thought that that was an issue that had been solved, and many of them had likely passed away. And yet in my reporting that began a few years ago in the Bronx, or with the lawsuit that began a few years ago in the Bronx, I found out that roughly a third of the Willowbrook class was still alive. There are actually about 2,300 surviving former residents of the Willowbrook State School, as the institution was called, and many are in group homes run by both New York State or by its contractors, and one of them was the one in the Bronx. So I was actually quite surprised to find that. And sadly, because so many family members have passed away, many of those residents really don't have active support from family or friends. There is an organization that looks out for them, but you know, it's a difficult situation to start with. And then to find out that many of them were suffering abuse or neglect today was really horrifying.
My guest is Benjamin Weiser from the New York Times. We're talking about his reportings. The name of the piece is Beatings, Burns, and Betrayal, The Willowbrook Scandal's Legacy. So you've brought us back to Union Avenue, and I want to play a bit of a clip from the episode of The Weekly that covers this story. It shows you speaking with two women whose sister was formerly in Willowbrook and now lives at the institution in Union Avenue. You refer to her as M. Let's take a listen.
These are copies of the questions and answers when the Justice Center interviewed employees at Union Avenue. So the question is, M would have bruises on her breast, on her stomach, on her buttocks. Have you ever discovered them? This has been years. At one time, she, meaning M, used to have big purple bruises here in the stomach. Looked like a big purple blotch. And then the questioner says some people that they've already talked to have described it as a footmark, like somebody had stepped on her or kicked her. What's it make you feel like when you're seeing these allegations?
I feel like going over there to the group home and beating everybody and see how it feels. It makes me angry.
Yeah.
And you know, you're supposed to be taking care of my sister, and look what's happening.
Ben,
why are they beating her? Why is this happening?
Ben, some of these families, they've seemed truly surprised about some of the details that you revealed to them. How aware were some of these families about these allegations of abuse?
It's a little unclear, but certainly in the case of M, her two sisters who I interviewed, and a second family that I also talked to at length, who had a nephew at Willowbrook, and then he was also abused at Union Avenue, were astonished and surprised. One of M's sisters had already asked at Union Avenue a couple of years ago when there was news coverage of the allegations of abuse and that lawsuit we talked about, and asked whether her sister, M, was also a victim, and was told no. Some of the state records I saw suggested that the state had called M's sister around the time that the allegations were raised. But there's no, I do not, you know, the sisters seem genuinely surprised, as we mentioned in the documentary when I read to them those questions and answers, which were coming from the Justice Center, which is actually a state agency that's really specifically investigates abuse in group homes. And the transcripts of its interviews, that agency's interviews with the staff, were made available to me in my reporting. I was very, you know, M's family and the other family I spoke with, I was really, you know, I felt they were very courageous to mm-hmm. come forward and talk about this. You know, for so many people, these issues are hidden if they're even known to start with. And there's been a lot of reaction since the story from people wondering, you know, sort of who is the voice for these people, many of whom themselves have no voice, literally.
In your reporting, did you discover anything, or did you get a sense of, was there something about the hiring process at these places that people were being accepted as caregivers? It makes me wonder about background checks, about references. Were the bad people attracted to this job, or is there something about the job that unleashed a monster in people?
There's no question the job can be really difficult, and that also New York State, I heard repeatedly complaints that, you know, these houses, these group homes were short-staffed, that salaries were low. More than one person told me that they could do better working at McDonald's. They could actually get a better salary and maybe less stressful a job, although they were obviously working for the state or the group home itself. And, you know, we spoke with union representatives who represent the state group home workers, many of whom were investigated at Union Avenue as a result of the allegations that first surfaced back in 2014. And they pointed out that there is a system that's been negotiated with the state of arbitration. And whenever there's discipline or the state tries to take action against an employee, it's then battled out through arbitration. At Union Avenue, the state identified 13 employees that it found had committed either abuse or neglect against a number of the two dozen residents of that home. I might add, not all of them were Willowbrook alumni, and tried to fire all 13 and could not fire a single one. And we reported that as of today, 7 of those workers are still working in group homes in New York State.
And to get a sense of, it's interesting, you're obviously a reporter and you're dealing with the facts, but you have sort of this exchange with the union representative for the Union Avenue employees. And I want to play a little bit of it because there's just this, the human being in you comes, I think in any of us would come out in the frustration with some of her answers. Let's take a listen.
We never condone abuse. Never, no way, no how, never. And I keep on saying, overwhelmingly, the staff, good workers.
Yeah. But as a worker who doesn't condone abuse, doesn't it worry you at all, concern you at all, that these workers were then sent to other places in the system? Or do you feel they've, in effect, been exonerated by the system?
I'm not speaking about exoneration. I'm speaking about respect for the arbitrator's decision.
Uh-huh.
And we have to have that also.
And you push and push on her. That's just a short bit of that. Were you surprised at all about this response?
No, it's very interesting. This spokeswoman, whose name is Denise Berkeley, who herself had worked with people with developmental disabilities, you know, she takes the position that the union does not condone abuse, that it makes the good workers look bad when there are abusive workers. As she told me, she said, you know, we think it's a fair process. Sometimes we like what the arbitrator says, and sometimes we don't. And it does leave the question, and many have asked since the article ran, you know, but when there are abusive workers found to have committed all sorts of either assaults or bruising people or even just neglecting them, you know, even if they are allowed to stay on, do they have to still work with this population that, mm-hmm. that has no way of really responding?
Were criminal charges ever considered?
No, it's a good question. We also interviewed the Bronx District Attorney, Darcelle Clark, who was not the district attorney when the allegations originally surfaced. But her office, she told me that her office investigated for more than a year a criminal investigation at Union Avenue and ultimately could not or did not bring prosecutions. She pointed out that these victims can't speak for themselves, and that they could not get help or cooperation from other employees or witnesses. There also, I learned, no video of these homes. And, you know, you can sort of understand that, too. There's a lot of privacy issues that might arise. But she ultimately told me, quote, it's not whether or not it happened. It's what we could prove. And so, you know, ultimately, there were no charges brought.
My guest is Benjamin Weiser from The New York Times. He is sharing his reporting from his piece titled Beatings, Burns, and Betrayal, The Willowbrook Scandal's Legacy. You know, I think people are maybe listening and thinking, gosh, do these family members have to be in these homes? When you talked to family members about why their families were in these homes, what did they tell you?
Well, I might add that there's no doubt that a large number, probably most, of the people who were once at Willowbrook and who now are in their, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s, they're much older, are in a better place today than they were at Willowbrook. It would be hard not to to come to that conclusion. You almost just have to look at the photos to see why. But it's also clear that many people are not able to care for their loved ones who might have such disabilities at home, for example. Many of the residents of the Bronx Group Home, for example, really required 24-hour attention and or close to it. And I did talk to families, including some who had their children at Willowbrook, who said that their family members today are thriving in private group homes and some in state group homes. Even M's sister, who's in a state-run group home, she seems to be doing well and treated well. So I don't think it's possible to, you know, paint with a broad brush, you know, every group home is bad at all. It's more a question of what happens when abuse arises and how is it investigated and how, most importantly, are the residents protected. The Willowbrook group, which today, as we said, is roughly 2,200 people, 2,300 people, you know, they were afforded special protections by the federal court in Brooklyn back in the 70s. And then that litigation, you know, continued for decades until Willowbrook closed. And the court ultimately issued a promise, a written promise, and New York State agreed that it would provide the Willowbrook residents with high-quality services in community-based settings for the rest of their lives. But of course, there are tens of thousands of more people with disabilities than just those who were at Willowbrook. And really, all the Willowbrook case did was raise the bar for everyone, it seems to me.
Who's running Union Avenue now?
Union Avenue recently was transferred from the state to a private provider. And that was also a term, a part of the settlement in that lawsuit. New York State paid roughly $6 million to three families and agreed to give up the control of the Union Avenue group home. It's now run by an organization called Institutes of Applied Human Dynamics. They took over just in late December. And I think, and the director of it told me that they have brought on completely new staff. There's no longer the staff who had been state staff. These were now employees of this organization. And they really understand the situation and they know they have work to do to build trust with the families, she told me.
From your reporting, when you think about Union Avenue in total and from the beginning to the end of your reporting, which I'm sure is going to continue to be ongoing though, where along the line could something have changed? Where along the line could someone have made a decision that would have made the situation at this particular home better?
That's a great question, and I'm not sure I know the answer. You know, I certainly don't really have a solution, but I feel like there has been an overall neglect, maybe too strong a word, but maybe inattention of this Willowbrook group to start with. I mean, it's clear to me that many of our readers, I don't think, had ever even heard of Willowbrook. You almost have to be, I hate to say this, of a certain age to remember Willowbrook.
Right.
Certainly anyone below the age of, say, 40 or 50, it's not necessarily on the front of your mind. And you also have to be a New Yorker in many ways. But for those who do remember Willowbrook, it's just so much a part of, certainly of my memory. And when I stumbled over that word, I said, Willowbrook, I remember Willowbrook. But I also realized I hadn't thought about it in decades. And that's probably the problem, that we haven't thought about it much. Willowbrook was out on Staten Island, so not everybody drove by. It's now been transformed, the campus, into the College of Staten Island, and there is an attempt being made to remember the legacy of Willowbrook with exhibits and signs, and I know that's good, but it wasn't really something that was, you know, front and center in most people's minds, I think.
My guest has been Benjamin Weiser. The name of the piece is Beatings, Burns, and Betrayal, The Willowbrook Scandal's Legacy. Ben, thanks for doing the reporting, and thanks for sharing this reporting with us.
Thank you, Allison, so much.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.